All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Everyone, and welcome to another installment in our Oscar series here on the Cinephiles, where we take a look at one Best Picture nominee. Here we've done so many of them, Steve. We are almost at the end here. I think this is our penultimate episode where we are going to dive into Dune Part Two. I am John Roca, joined as always by my co-host Steve Morris. How are you, Steve?
I'm feeling a little dry. I got to take a little water for my still suit in order to keep going in this hot Los Angeles desert. But other than that, I'm doing pretty good.
Yes, as you can tell by our noises and the water references, we are diving into Dune Part Two here. This is the second of a two-part adaptation from director Denis Villeneuve, based on the book Dune by Frank Herbert, of course, the late great David Lynch, who we did a live episode of the show on. If you guys haven't listened to it, our tribute to David Lynch, he did the original adaptation onto screen there back in the 1980s with a leather bikini clad Sting and Kyle MacLachlan. But this one, of course, continues the journey of Paul Atreides, played by Timothy Chalamet, as he unites with the Fremen people of the desert planet Arrakis to wage war against House Harkonnen. Zendaya is back here, Rebecca Ferguson, Josh Brolin, Stellan Skarsgård, Dave Bautista, Charlotte Rampling, and Javier Bardem all reprise their roles. But we get Austin Butler back in a role that a lot of people felt he should have been nominated for Best Supporting Actor for. Florence Pugh is in this movie to tease what might be happening in the next film, which is Dune Messiah. Christopher Walken comes in here as the king. And Lea Seydoux joins the cast as well, as one of my personal favorite actresses. So, Steve, let's get into this conversation about Dune Part Two. It has been nominated for numerous awards here, but unfortunately, a lot of people don't feel this one's going to win Best Picture at all. But what are your thoughts about Dune Part Two?
Well, first of all, I should say that I first read the book Dune when I was 13 or 14. And this was a big book. I mean, literally a big book. But it's an important book in my childhood. And it's so funny thinking about being a nerd in that era, because the idea of liking science fiction or comic books is like, that's kid stuff. Mm-hmm. And reading Dune is not kid stuff.
Yeah, no.
And so I was hugely excited. We talked about it when we talked about David Lynch, when the David Lynch movie came out. And it was interesting. You know, even in high school, I kind of knew that this wasn't a particularly great movie. And it's funny. So I read all the Dune books when I was in high school, probably read them again in college. And then when Dune Part One came out, I decided to reread all the Dune books again.
Yeah.
And Dune is an amazing novel, and they get weirder and stranger and more pretentious and bizarre as they go on. Mm. And I think this is a really, really difficult story to tell in terms of its scope. And I think this might, certainly visually, but even in general, this might be one of the greatest adaptations of a science fiction novel ever. Like for me, these two movies, it's like they're putting on the screen the world that I had seen in my head when I was 13. I swear to God, there's so much about the way that Villeneuve imagined this world that's like, that's it. He got it in a way that I did not really think it's possible. I think it's visually, in terms of the design of the world, the most perfectly realized adaptation of a novel I can think of.
That's an incredible statement. Yeah, I mean, there is so much to savor and enjoy in both of these movies, Dune Part One and Part Two, and I'm always mystified at the level of what I deem to be disrespect that people have towards these movies, because they don't see them or value them quite at the highest levels as I do. And I don't get, this is my favorite movie of 2024. And I think this is the best movie of 2024 in terms of performances, writing, cinematography, costumes, direction. And as you said, the visuals in this movie are absolutely stunning. You know, I think of the opening shot of them flying through the air quietly, those the people they're going to kill there. I mean, just seeing all of those things. And then you get into the castles and you get into the visions that they're having there as they're drinking that water of life and where they go. And then, of course, the story it tells here with Paul and his journey into accepting being the leader of the Fremen and what it means following Stilgar's devotion to him, causing division with him and Shani, and taking what his mother had in terms of the immense faith in him and going next level with it and achieving almost a religious leader, cult-like status in his approach to all of this. And in the end, taking Florence Pugh as his wife, as a king might do here in order to unite the warring factions and bring some semblance of peace. And I don't know what happens in the next installment of the book, but I, from what I've heard, is that Paul goes into a really dark place and a lot of terrible things happen. So I'm very interested to see where we're going to get there when it goes on to the Dune Messiah, which they're apparently going to be shooting soon. But this film itself is just stunning from top to bottom. It is eminently rewatchable. There's some great commentary about the about slavish devotion to a religion or to a belief, and also a assuming or accepting that belief within yourself and embracing this idea that you are special and where that can lead you both positively and negatively in your world. And if you don't listen to the people around you who are trying to ground you, how you can fly off into a very dangerous atmosphere to exist in. So there's so much here that I just savor and enjoy about the movie.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that the degree of difficulty that Villeneuve tackles, well, it relates really to what Frank Herbert was trying to do, because what's really interesting about Dune in this story, and you hinted at it a bit, is that it's classic hero's journey. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, you meet this character, it's very much in it, like so many stories that you map against Joseph Campbell myths, yeah, of like, he is the chosen one and he has to go on this journey and he has to go away from home and he has to lose things and he has to meet the wise people and he has to learn these lessons and take on his strength and become his identity and all that stuff. Classic, yeah, Joseph Campbell. And because of that, when I was a kid, I just loved Paul Atreides. I, yeah, just really just like, this is the coolest guy ever. I was so, and you know, my geeky friends would say to each other, like, fear is the mind killer. Like we would, yeah, you know, because that's what nerds would do after you read this book. And what Frank Herbert was trying to do was he was trying to take all of that and warp it and say, no, this is actually a truly dangerous thing that is happening. Right. And you're rooting for the person who is becoming the, you know, essentially self-proclaimed messiah that's going to, yeah, take over the universe. And there's going to be millions of people that are going to die, yeah, because of what's happening here. And as a kid, I didn't see any of that. You know, like I really was just like, Paul's awesome. Go Paul. Hmm. And I think what the movie does actually better than the book is it sows the little seeds of distrust and, yeah, worry. Particularly what it handles the best, I think, in this area is the Lady Jessica.
Yeah.
Which is that there's just times where you want to like her.
Yeah.
And then there are times, and particularly after she drinks the water of life and she's communicating with her baby, unborn baby, which they, yeah, handle beautifully, I think handle better in the movie than they do in the book, is, yeah, you go, I'm not comfortable with this. I don't trust her. Yeah. I am really, you can see how she's manipulating things behind the scenes. And there's a creepy sort of element as she's communicating with her baby. And it's just like, yeah, oh, and you see Paul's resistance much more clearly, I think, of like, this is dangerous for me to go down this pathway. And he doesn't want to do it,
yeah,
because he knows just how dangerous it is. That's one of the areas. So in going into Dune Messiah, which I think is a much messier book, because that's when Frank Herbert is trying to shift things in this really weird way. I actually kind of hope that Villeneuve moves a little bit away, like maybe he can improve upon it a bit, because, yeah, like I said, as the books go on, they get weirder and more pretentious and harder to follow and less story based and more problematic.
Yeah.
You know, so
interspecies babies.
There's all sorts of weird shit going on in those books. And it's so funny because I finished them all and the last three were just a slog. Ugh. And I literally am going, because I like to reread books.
Yeah.
Like, I will probably read Dune again. Maybe, yeah, I would read Dune Messiah again. And I was like, as I'm finishing the last ones, I'm like, I am never going to read God Emperor of Dune again or do Children of Dune again or like all these other ones. Nah, that's it. I will never go back to those again. It's not, yeah, worth it.
That's why I think it's not a surprise this week that it came out that they're looking at other directors to carry on the Dune thing. And one of the first people they mentioned is Gareth Edwards. And I'm like, Gareth is not the best at telling stories. And if you want to hand him Children of Dune, oh man, good luck. It'll be visually great, I'm sure, because Gareth Edwards' movies are always visually stunning to watch. But the heart, the emotion, the connection with the people, that's not always something he achieves in his movie. So I'd be very curious to see what he would do with Children of Dune, for sure. But yeah, I think this is a great point you bring up, Steve, and the film does, and not having read the book in a very, very long time, what the film does really well is, as you said, to show the distrust. Yes, Lady Jessica, seeing how powerful, Paul is becoming powerful beyond even her imagination of what he would become, but also Chani, right? Chani is just wanted to love him, and there is a path he could have walked with her, and maybe it wouldn't have led to supreme power and life for a long time, but it was a more noble path, and he rejects it in order to embrace this situation because he believes now that he is the chosen one. Now that he's bought into the prophecy, it becomes where he takes his laser focus that was of resistance to the situation. Now he turns it to acceptance, and it becomes even more aggressive in his acceptance of it all. Great fight scene at the end with him and Austin Butler there as Fade Rautha, and the way he communicates with Walken and with Princess Arulun, who's being played by Florence Pugh. You can tell this is a different Paul. Even the look he gives to Chani, he's almost saying to her, like, hang around with me because I promise this will work out in a certain way and be my concubine. And she's like, I don't think she's on board with that. And I like that she gives him that look that she's not going to do it. You know, so that's a bit of a change. So I want to see how that plays out, or if she's doing it in a way that's more subtle in order to get him back to center. I don't know. But I like that there's a lot of mystery going into the third one about what these relationships are going to lead to ultimately and how they're going to play themselves out.
John, did you know that your actual age might not be the same as your biological age? I mean, it's not just about your birthday. Your body could be a little bit older, could be a little bit younger than what you think. And that's where True Diagnostic comes in. With their True Age test, you can discover your true biological age. Plus, get insights into things like your risk for heart disease, Alzheimer's, and even early mortality. And the best part, it's all done from the comfort of your home. No prescriptions, no lab visits. It's just a simple test sent right to your door.
Yeah, Steve, that's why I was so excited when True Diagnostics said they wanted to come on and sponsor us here on The Cinephiles. You know, you and me both talk about our health, and certainly people listening to us, they're very aware of their health as they get a little bit older, and you want to kind of stop things from coming or be more aware of what might be coming. And True Diagnostic has a thing called True Age Test. And in that True Age Test, you can find out so much about the age of your body, which helps you. So I was very excited when I got my True Age Test recently from True Diagnostic.
And the cool part is, this is not guesswork. The True Age Test is based on peer-reviewed research from scientists working at Harvard, Duke, and Yale. I mean, this is real science that you can trust. So think about what it would be like to know exactly how your lifestyle is impacting your body. True Diagnostic makes it easy to get started, offering simple, actionable insights that you can use right away. This is your chance to take control of your health and get the bigger picture. Don't leave it to chance. True Diagnostic helps you understand not just where you're at now, but where you're headed.
All great points, Steve. All right, Cinephiles fans, are you ready to find out your biological age? Right now, our listeners can get 20% off their entire order at TrueDiagnostic.com by using the code CINEPHILES at checkout. That's TrueDiagnostic, TrueDiagnostic.com. Just use the code CINEPHILES to save 20%. Plus, if you subscribe, you'll get an additional 20% off the 50% discount. Discover your true age today.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
But let's talk about the acting, man. What do you think of Chalamet's performance here? Zendaya, who's given much more real estate than the first movie to show what she can do with Chani, the return of Rebecca Ferguson here. Brolin comes in halfway through the movie to help Paul and with that stockpile. Austin Butler is in a fantastic new addition. Batista comes back, walking in here. Lea Seydoux. Skarsgård come back as Harkonnen. Charlotte Rampling has her return as Mother Mohaim. And Javier Bardem as Stilgar. You know, Javier is kind of like the battering ram of belief for Paul more than anyone else. And you could argue indirectly is responsible for what happens here by the end of the movie. But what are your thoughts on the performances here overall from everybody?
Well, I'm trying to figure out which order I want to go to here. So I'll do the shorter ones first, which is that look, I love Dave Bautista, but I feel like Villeneuve really, really likes to make him yell. And I wish there was less. Yeah, I am not a big fan of the yelling, we must destroy, you know, like that kind of stuff. It's not my style. And right. I don't think, and having watched how amazing he is in Guardians of the Galaxy with being more subtle, it's like, no, just making the big angry guy yell big and angry is was probably my only one of very, very few criticisms I have of the movie, although I always like him. Walken, great choice to cast Walken as the Emperor. Florence Pugh, who I love, is fine, but she just doesn't have that much to do.
Yeah,
I agree with you. Austin Butler, the moment he shows up on screen, and I love that they do the whole arena fight essentially in black and white.
Yeah.
And it is so cool. And he is a genuinely scary, scary guy. And what's really interesting, one of the things about the movie is the Bene Gesserit is, you know, they're all about power. They are not about morality.
Yeah.
And so, because the fact that they're even considering this sociopath as the becoming the most powerful person in the universe is really terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, and well, and it also, I think one of the lessons, and it's, you could, there's totally all sorts of connections between Dune and Star Wars. Like George Lucas read Dune, you know, the Bene Gesserit are very connected to the Jedi Council. Like there's, you know, so many things. You know, we have a desert planet on Tatooine and the desert planet of Arrakis. There's all these things. And one of them is the futility of the behind the scenes manipulation of the future, you know, is something that really comes out, I think, with the Bene Gesserit. I think what they managed to do with Gurney Halleck, which is Josh Brolin, and Stilgar, played by Javier Bardem, and Zendaya, is this really perfect setup of understanding each of their perspectives and Lady Jessica and all of their feelings about Paul and all of their feelings of who they want him to be and how those things don't agree. You know, like Gurney can't see the religious aspect of it. He can only see the, you're the son of the Duke and you have responsibilities as Paul Atreides. Stilgar can only see the religious aspect of it. And it's so funny because he's so likable as a character. But it's scary, too, because he's, like, fully signed into this thing.
Yeah.
Lady Jessica is, like, manipulating Paul. It's not like, I love my son and I want the best for him. Mm. It's Paul is part of a great plan.
Yeah.
And Chani loves Paul, you know, and doesn't want any of these pressures coming in from all these other places. And I think each of these performances are really, really strong. And Zendaya, I just like her more and more every time I see her. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I think she's great. I she's so compelling on screen.
Yeah, there are young actors that a lot of these critics and how can I say this? Pundits try to prop up earlier than they need to be. I think of DiCaprio in the same way. Like DiCaprio, yes, Gilbert Grape. But then, you know, there's some stumbles and some not so maybe best films or whatever. But and he's learning. He's becoming stronger. And Aviator is when you see him about to make the jump,
right?
There's stuff in Aviator where he's about to make the jump. Doesn't quite get there, but he's going to make that jump. And then the next few films, you see him ascend to the status that he has. With Zendaya, I felt the same way. Like they've tried to prop her up quicker than she needs to be. And it's this film where you start to see, okay, now this is someone who I think is going to be an incredible actress as she matures and gets older and embraces her power more. And certainly in the movie, it comes to bear as the film goes along, how much power she has to try to influence Paul. In the end, it doesn't work, but certainly you can see that she grows in power throughout it. And I love that. And I agree. The performances here across the board, fantastic. I hear you about Batista for sure. But I think that's why you bring in Austin Butler and do what he did. To him. But Austin, I mean, like, I'm so surprised he didn't get nominated for this because it's such an incredible performance. It's you could argue it's a standout performance of the movie, really. And what he delivers here, considering what he did with Elvis versus what he does here, it's just stunning to witness. And you're right, Javier Bardem, I think, is such an interesting character in all of this because everyone is trying to tell him to not do this with Paul, to not go down this route. And I think this is a fascinating part of the movie is that it is about deconstructing the, or how can I say this? It's about what reality you want to embrace, right? And we're seeing nowadays certainly people believe narratives as they want to believe narratives. And really, as I get older, I realize how much of a construct our entire lives are and how much we have constructed whatever our constructs are in our lives in order to function. I believe this. I see this, therefore I believe this, right? And Stilgar represents that. He is unwavering. He's like Morpheus in The Matrix, unwavering in his belief that Paul is the one, Neo is the one, and he will ignore all signs, and he will even see certain signs that aren't there and make them fit within his narrative. So it's very much about dueling narratives of what your proposed reality is, right? Zendaya, Chani, she has a different reality that she's bought into and she has accepted the construct of. Stilgar has a different reality that he's accepted the construct of. So is Lady Jessica, and because she has a bigger overall plan, as she said. So to me, I also like that the film explores this idea of like we are willing acceptors of a construct that feels right to us, but really, what is the truth? We never really know. And what it can lead to, as you see at the end with Paul, can be quite destructive depending on the construct, you know?
I think these are great points. I think we want to believe that we gather information about the world, we gather facts and data, and then based on that, we form our beliefs. But the reality is much more often that we have a set of beliefs and we accumulate information and data that supports those beliefs that we already had in the first place. And it's so true. You see it in our political realm. You see it in all sorts of places where it's like, I mean, we've had conversations of like our perception of a human. It's like, oh, well, I think this person is this kind of person and therefore they did this because of this. And then you have a conversation with them and they're like, oh no, they did that for a completely different reason.
Yeah.
You know, but we see the world that way. I mean, I was just listening to, I won't go into the details, but it was an interview with someone in a political nature and they had a very, very strong religious connection to a political figure that they were convinced of and had lots of information that supported why that was a religious figure. And it was interesting, again, back to the Stilgar of it all, is it's not the one of the people or data points that he's ignoring is Paul himself. That he's saying you're the one and Paul's saying, no, that's not what should happen. Don't think that of me.
Right.
You know, and it also just goes to I think what's great about good science fiction is actually exists to make us think about our world. You know, so first of all, there's no question that written in the 60s that what he was thinking about was oil, it's about the environment. And there's this desert area that has this incredible resource. And there's a very religious group of people that live in this desert area that rule this resource. And if they were to control that resource, and this is a decade before OPEC is when this book was written, if they control that resource, then they have tremendous power over all these powerful groups that desperately need that resource for transportation and power, which is exactly, you know, so A, there's that. And it's also like he wanted to talk about political systems. He wanted to talk about religious ideas. And it really, hopefully, I mean, if you watch this movie, you just go, man, that was a great adventure. It looked super cool. I love the sandworms. It was really cool. Then that's great. Yeah. And good science fiction hopefully will do that. Yeah. But if you actually want to sit and think about the way that power is controlled, and this goes to what the reason I brought this whole thing up is that we are constantly in a position where we go, should we use tactics that we don't like? Because the threat against us is so profound.
Yeah.
And they're going to use horrible tactics against us. And Paul doesn't want, there's a whole bunch of stuff that Paul doesn't want to do.
Right.
But he's going to end up doing it, you know, because he's up against the Harkonnens who murdered his father, destroyed, you know, and the emperor himself is actually conspiring against Paul and his people. And he's with these people, the Fremen, who are also under threat. And you got to fight back. And so all of the choices Paul makes are totally reasonable. And, you know, it's going to take us to a place that's pretty unreasonable.
Yeah. The ugly truth about evil is that when you fight it, or what you determine to be evil, is that you can become the exact same thing that you were fighting in order to defeat it. And the question becomes, can you pull yourself out of it once you've defeated it, right? And what is the line in Untouchables? I've become what I beheld, and I'm content that I've done so, right? And those things of like, can you climb out of it. So yeah, a lot to consider in this movie. What are your final thoughts? What are your thoughts on the direction here as we wrap up our conversation on this movie? Thoughts on the direction, cinematography, the score from Hans Zimmer? What are your thoughts here?
So first of all, design-wise, the crazy thought I had as I'm watching this was that a lot of the architecture in Dune, both on the Harkonnen world and on Arrakis, could easily be designed by Laszlo Toth of The Brutalist, because it is brutalist architecture.
Great
point. Totally is big, sort of concrete, great, overwhelmingly powerful structures. Like, it looks like brutalist architecture. So that was the first thought. And I think it's amazing. So production design off the charts, great. Sound design. I mean, these are the categories I strongly think this movie is going to win and should win. Production design, sound design, visual effects. I mean, the sequence, I know we're spoiling a little more than maybe we should have, but it's a 60-plus-year-old book.
Right.
The sequence in which Paul rides the sandworm for the first time. It might be one of the most powerful moments of ascension I've ever seen in a movie. I just think everything about it, the music, the design, the build to it, the editing is just perfectly done. I think it's what's amazing to me about this film is that it's Villeneuve's hand, his calm, clear direction is what makes this movie work. Like it is, you never feel like you're not in good hands with this storyteller.
I
really will pull it up with kind of with the work of Steven Spielberg. Like, I think that he is approaching like that kind of level in terms of being able to tell a big story with a lot of complex emotions, really clearly. I don't, of course, I've read the books, so I know more than most people, but I really feel like if you sit down and give these two movies the time, you will get everything that he's putting out there, you know?
Agreed, 100%. And I think that's the best way to describe it, Steve, as you said, confident. There's a confidence in his direction here, but also a reverence for the source material and a genuine love for it. And I think that comes through. That's such a difficult line to walk, you know, because you want to make sure that people who are casual viewers of films like this are sucked in and the diehards feel respected by the work you've done in the overall product, because they love the book so much and the series so much. So I think he did an incredible job. I mean, $717 million is nothing to sneeze at for a film like this and the length of a film like this as well. So yeah, incredible direction. Hans Zimmer's score is fantastic. The cinematography throughout, the costumes, all of it are just so, so effective to bring you into this world. And it's on HBO Max now. I think they just added it in the last couple of weeks. So if you guys want to catch up on it again before the Oscars, you can do so there. Any final words, or shall we wrap up, my friend?
I think this movie is well worth everyone's time to watch. I watched both of them again, and I will probably watch them all. I can't wait for Dune Messiah and watch more of them. So I think these are fantastic films.
Agreed with Steve as well. Well, thank you all so much for listening to this episode of our Oscar series here, Breaking Down Dune Part 2. If you've missed all the other episodes, they're all up for you to listen to. Every episode except for, if you listen to as we drop this, every episode except for The Substance is out now for you all to listen to. So maybe do a little primer for yourselves before you watch the Oscars ceremony on Sunday. And before you watch the Oscars ceremony on Sunday, come and join us live on our Cinephiles YouTube channel this Saturday at 3 p.m. PT as we hold our first ever Cinephiles Award show, where we hand out where we pick and you all pick the winners from a bunch of categories. And if you haven't signed up for that to vote, you can sign up at our Patreon. You don't even have to sign up for a paid tier. You can sign up for free on it to be a free member of our Patreon, and you will get to vote. So do that as quickly as possible, because time is running out, right, Steve?
You definitely have to get your vote in, because the voting will be closed at noon on Friday, February 28th. We had to close the voting because obviously we have to send it off to the private high-end accounting firm who will be tabulating the votes for the Cinephiles Awards. So if you want to get your vote in, go to patreon.com/thecinephiles, join the free tier, and you can vote as long as you get your vote in by February 28th at noon Pacific time.
Yeah, 12 p.m. PT for those who need to have it spelled out. Yes.
And if you want to buy or stream any of these Oscar films, you can do so at cinephiles.net. You can subscribe to the show at all the usual places. There have been so many comments on Spotify. So if you're a Spotify user, it's a really fun way, because you could comment on each individual episode, and there's some nice discussions going on there. You can also subscribe, of course, on Apple Podcasts and support the show through Apple Podcasts. And you can reach me at SR Morris on Twitter and SR Morris1 on Instagram.
And you can reach me at The Roka Says on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok, and The Outlaw Nation on Twitch. Oh, yes, and at The Roka Says on Blue Sky as well. All right, thank you all so much, and we'll talk to you next time with another brand new installment here of our Oscar series on The Cinephiles. Take care. Until then.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.